Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Civil al-Muslim, Imam Rashid, Imam from the region, all of you brothers and sisters, wish you peace. As-salamu alaykum. Praise be to Allah, Most High, Guardian, Evolver, Cherisher, Sustainer of all the world. Peace and blessings upon His servant and His messenger, Muhammad, forever. Ameen. Dear beloved Muslims, it is indeed a great pleasure for me to visit you here in New York at this masjid, Malcolm Shabazz Masjid, during the month of Ramadan. I was in this region, as most of you know, many of you know, about a week ago. And I didn't expect to return so soon, but I was given an invitation by the Imam to return if I so desired to return. And I told him that I felt it was a good idea and I would be happy to answer his invitation. So here we are, here in New York City from Chicago. And the weather's about the same. In fact, everything is about the same. You just have more of it here. But everything is about the same. People are the same all over, you know. They don't change very much. I have been now your imam and leader for about 6 years or more. And I have been residing in Chicago all that time. And we have struggled there to bring the truth, light, home to the consciousness of the people and to awaken them to their dignity, personal dignity, and the community dignity that they should have, that we all should have, and try to direct everybody in a positive and constructive way so that we'll be more productive as individuals and more productive as a society or as a community. And I feel that Allah has blessed us. I feel that we have made some progress, and that progress is visible or is noticeable all over the world. And that is all over the world where we are located. Many of us, we think of ourselves as being only in the United States, but you must remember that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his mission had converted people outside of the United States, and most of those people outside of the United States who were converted to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they continued with us until now. Many of them have been confused, many have been misled to believe that what I represent is something different from what it really is. But we have patience with them because we know they're not responsible for their confusion. We don't have an opportunity to meet all of them, to speak with them, to see them regularly. So they're getting misinformation from different sources, but not from us. They're not getting proper information from us. But they're still holding on, and there are many among them who understand, and they're solidly placed in this religion, and they're good Muslims, very good Muslims, and they are committed to the American Muslim mission, policies, goals, and aspirations, and they support me as their leader. And that's in the Caribbean, in Africa, in England, many, many places in this world. I won't name others because I found out it's best to keep quiet sometimes. But we have people many, many places in this world who are very, very excited over their mission. I say their mission. This mission is the mission of everybody who embraces it. It becomes, once you become a Muslim, in this mission, this becomes your mission. It's pretty warm here, but I don't think it's too bad. It was worse back there. I wasn't getting the breeze. It's a little better now. I almost feel tempted to put my coat back on. But I'm not going to do that. It'll make you hot just looking at me in that coat. There are many things that I would like to speak to you about today. But first, I must make it clear that I didn't come here for any trouble. I don't like trouble in this hot weather. I came here to speak to you as your imam. I didn't come here for trouble. I received many letters since I made some comments regarding Imam Rashid's religious zeal. I don't think I use that word, but that's what I was referring to. And somebody thought I meant that the man didn't pray, the man didn't believe in the Quran, the man wasn't a good leader, he wasn't doing anything, that he's not spiritual, he's not religious, he can't lead a religious community. I don't know where all that came from. I never said that. I only said that this was a special area. And we got imams that are good, and we got imams that are better. We got those that are the worst. And I hope I didn't leave anyone with the impression that he is an inferior imam. Given the time that we have had to leave this community and come into the knowledge of Quran and how to officiate as an imam, many of the imams have shown great progress. And Imam Rashid is among the best of them. And if you don't know, then take my word for it, because I know them. I've met them, I've been around, and I know them. And believe me, he represents the better of the imams, not the worst and not the middle, but the better of the imams. And as an administrator, and as a propagator, as a worker in the community and the outer community, he rates top. He rates at the top. That's right. There are very few that I know can stand with him. That's right. Very few. And they haven't proven by their work. I believe they got the ability, but they haven't been tested like he's been tested. Now, I don't know how a man can listen to all the fine compliments that I gave him in privacy. He gives me a lot in public, but I give him a lot in privacy. All the fine compliments that I gave him in privacy and in public, and then feel that I'm going to do something to hurt him or sit him down or something. No, indeed. I think you're promoting a man when you put him in a position to realize more of his talent. And at the time, I felt that he would be better off in community relations, public and community relations. Since then, I've gotten letters from different ones, and they have said, Brother Imam, we don't know what moved you to speak like that on the hookah against the imam, but the imam has really made tremendous progress, and he's about to bring this community to life. And we're doing so many wonderful things now. Our hopes are up. Well, that made me feel very good. Because we don't get reports like that. We get bad reports, you know. Very seldom somebody will report something good. That's us, you know. Yeah. So it was very good to hear those nice letters and nice compliments paid to the imam here of his works. But let me tell you something. Then the one right me that didn't know you better than this man right here, all right? Okay, they didn't tell me anything that I don't know. In fact, I could have told them more than they told me. The man is much greater than you yourself described him in your letters to me. The point that I was making is this. This community is growing in the language of al-Islam. By the language of al-Islam, I mean the language of Quran, the universal language of Muslims all over the world. This community is growing in that way. And certain areas are more sensitive than others. Many of us are not interested in, the religion outside of the experiences that you've had in this community. But there are some who are interested in this religion, and their interest goes beyond their experiences in this community. We have an obligation to them too. Not just to you, whose interests are concern is limited to the community, but also to those whose interest goes out beyond the community, bigger than the community. We also have an obligation to advance somebody in Islamic knowledge if they need that advancement. We're also obligated to look at the place and the potential for that place, the need for that place, and to make the best decision for that place. Do you know anywhere in the United States where there are more people clustered together than there is right here, than there are right here in this city? I don't know of any place. So this place is very special, very special. Now, many of you, if I said I'm going to send Shining Knight, so-and-so, to this message, to head this message, I know what's going to be your response. What? We don't need him. We don't need nobody. We got our imam. And you'll be the very one who's not supporting the imam you got. We don't need him. We got our imam. Simply because human beings are weak. We don't want to do anything extra. That's the attitude of most of us. We don't want to do anything extra. We don't want no extra pressure on us. We want to have it easy. You know? And we want the man who's over us to be our buddy. You know? The man that be over us, we like him better if he's our buddy. But let me tell you, that attitude is not the best for our people. Your attitude should be, we want the best man. My buddy or nobody's buddy. The best man. And we want the man that'll get the best out of us. Whether it means pushing me or shaking me up or not, I should want the man that gets the best out of me. I'm of the opinion that New York deserves me, the best that this community has. That's my opinion. Now, that's my opinion, you know. Yeah. I believe that where the people are centered, that's where the man should be. Yeah. And more of us are centered here than anywhere else in the United States. And I believe the problems we have here are more complicated. The burden on the individual is greater here than it is in any place in the United States. Especially for these individuals we are talking about. You understand? All right. Okay. So if I would say, I should be here. Do you know there's a lot here that would hate that? They don't want me here because they know I'm the knight with shining armor. But that's okay, you know. I'm also a very patient man. Now, that's enough for that, you know. Anybody got a watch? I'd like to watch the time. I don't want to keep you here too long. Can you give me a watch so I can watch the time? Thank you very much.
Praise be to Allah. All right.
Now, before getting into the talk that I plan to give you today, just want to make a few comments or share with you some things that I believe you know, but nevertheless, they're good to mention again, or it's good to share with those who don't know. Now, dear beloved brothers and sisters, myself first, I would like for you to know something about me. And I think it's necessary for the believers to know this about me. I am, first of all, a God-fearing person. Number one. What I do, I first look to Allah. First to Allah. My next concern is my job, and that is Imam for you. That's my next concern. After I've taken care of my personal business with Allah, then I want to know how is my person as a leader to you shaping up? How does it look? As an individual, I am not a man that wants a lot of action. This is my private life. I'm not a person that wants a lot of action. In other words, I could leave this and be just as happy if I thought someone was doing the job well enough. All right? That doesn't mean I don't like to be the imam. Certainly I enjoy it. I love it. I love doing that. But if I knew that someone else could do this job as good as me, they would have the resignation right now. My resignation would be given right now, in type with my signature. Why? Because I like a private life. I enjoy a private life. And I think I can do a lot living a private life for Allah, for this religion. I don't think that my opportunities would be cut off simply because I'm not your imam. I don't think that. I think I could do a lot for this religion without being your imam. To tell you the truth, I started to place in my resignation a couple of weeks ago. And I started to place it because too much confusion was coming to me, unnecessarily. People said, why are you this? Why are you that? Why are you this? Why are you that? And what they were saying didn't have no base. Questions they were asking that were attacking me, they had no base for it. Just guessing, I guess. You know, I don't know what it was. But, you know, a man can get enough of that. And he wonders, what is it? And what is this job? What have I gotten myself into? You know? But I said to myself, how can I go tell them? Council imam that I quit. How can I tell them that? They won't know how to tell the people. So I have to go around and tell all the people myself. I quit. So I said, all right, I give it up. I stop thinking about resignation. I give that idea, give that thought up. So I decided, no, I can't resign. I have to stay with it. Now, as your leader, I have a moral obligation to this religion, to this community, also to myself. I have a moral obligation to give you the best. To give you the best. And the best means hurting your feelings sometimes. The best means hurting one of our imams' feelings sometimes, you know? But that's the best. And one thing I've been criticized for, I think more than anything else, in which I'm guilty of this, and that is for exposing people publicly. Criticizing them publicly. You know, I've been criticized that. And I agree. It's not a good thing to do that. Because you hurt the image of people, and it gives them a lot of problems. And sometimes you might put them in a situation where they can't function as well or can't perform as well. I agree that it has its problems. But let me tell you something. I have never done that until somebody put my back against the wall. All right? And that's the perfect truth. I've never done that until there's no other way out. In Chicago, they told me, "Brother Imam, you just destroy us. So we can't work. We have no credibility because of what you say about us to the believers." And I told him once. Now, believe me, this was 5 years ago, and he wasn't even a problem for me then. I said, "Look, niggas. If you niggas could hear in privacy, I wouldn't say a thing in public." Now, anyone who wants to shut me up, just listen to me in privacy, and I'll never speak a thing against you in public. That's not aimed at the imam back here. That's just aimed at everybody that's had some problems with me, you know. I don't claim to be the best in every area and every field. No. A leader, no one man can be the best at everything. We have our area of excellence. And everybody have their area of excellence, you know. But I believe I'm your leader, not because I'm a jack of all trades. It's because you think I have leadership qualifications. And that leadership qualification you think is a God gift, a God blessing. Well, that's my belief, too. That's why I stay with the job. Because I believe, too, that I have God-given talent to lead people in the right way. Now, I'm not an economist. I've studied it, certainly. And believe me, I know a lot about it. But if we got into a great economic venture, I would seek people with degrees, people with expertise, people with more knowledge and experience. I would seek them, although I think I'm kind of heavy in economics. You might not know it, but I studied volumes of economics. Yes, indeed, volumes of economics. Private economics, government economics. That's right. Why did I do that? Because we were a community into economics. And I felt that I should know something about it so that if I ever got the opportunity, I could help the community economically. You say, "Well, what have you done, Chief?" I've helped you, baby, economically. "Oh, but what happened to our restaurant?" I don't know. I don't know. You're talking about charity. You ain't talking about economics. I'm talking about economics. A leader, if he is over a community who's involved in business, his responsibility is to look out after the good financial interests of that community. And if in doing that, it means to cut off charities from from giving faith to businesses which would otherwise not, wouldn't have a faith, then he should cut off charities to those businesses. All right, so we don't want to go into that whole thing. But let me tell you something. There is adopt fast food service, fast food service, fried fish. We supported him morally and financially. Morally from the time he started till now, financially one time. Just one time. That was about 5 years ago. Doc is still in business, still doing well. He's growing. Now that's one example or one case. There are hundreds like that in this community. Hundreds like that in this community. If we wanted to, we could make a brochure of the progressive, progressing business people in this community, and it will be so much bigger than anything else we've ever done that you would say, oh, well, I'm going to stop worrying and start singing the blues. We're doing fine. But because you don't see something up on top of a mountain for everybody to look at, you don't see a promotion campaign. Look what we are doing with fish. Look what we are doing with this. Look what we are doing with that. You don't see that, so you feel let down. Don't be let down. Believe me, I'm in touch with people. I know what's happening. We have more business in this community than we ever had. And nobody's being forced out or browbeaten to get the work done. People are committed to business because they have business interests. You might say, well, what about us? Yes, what about you? We got a program for you, too. What are you doing for it? The program for you, I'm speaking to those who are not business people. Or who are not interested in going into private business for themselves. Or don't have the vision, or maybe don't have the opportunity. What is the program for you? Collective vine, which if it was supported, it would also stimulate private business. In fact, it would give the little Bilalian businessman, or the poor man, it would give him the leverage that he really needs. It will give him the stick, the tool that he really is missing. And that is the opportunity to get his goods at a price where he can compete with the other fellow. Collective buying will do that. So some places we're doing pretty well with that. I know cities where that's coming along pretty well. In fact, this is one city where it started, and I understand you're keeping it up. You're not letting it down. You have faith in it. So in time, maybe it will really develop into something big. It can be something big. Easily it can be something big. But many of us want what my father said you can't do without. Now, if Yaqub had the nerve to disagree with God, I'm certainly that you will excuse me if I disagree with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me, he said, look, son, he said, I know these people. He said, they won't do anything unless you're sitting up on top of a horse and cracking a whip over their heads all the time. He said, this is a donkey people. And they don't understand nothing but the whip. So you have to drive them. Now, I say I disagree with him. Does that mean I dislike him or I'm saying he was a terrible man or Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a slave master? No, that was, he's entitled to his belief. The man is entitled to his belief. And his life and experience had convinced him that you were that people that can't do anything unless people browbeat you and whip you and shove you around, you know? And your attitude says, I've been the imam, seems to support the Honorable Elijah Muhammad more than support me. But I'm not giving up because I know I'm right. He's right, too. In his own time, in his own vision, in his own situation, he was right. But in my vision, in my situation, in my time, I'm right. It's time for the individual to be trusted with more responsibility for self. and to be treated with respect, with the dignity that Allah gave each and every one of us. Brother Imam, can I keep on talking? May I? If he says no, I'll listen to him. He knows you better than I do. Right? No, you do. You know them better than I do. You live here. Now, beloved people, let me tell you something that I wish had been told us long, long time ago. In fact, I wish we never had to be told this. Can you hear me out? Can everybody hear me all right? Good. I don't want you to miss this.
Okay.
All right. We just have to do the best I can, but I hope all of you can hear this, because this is something that we need to hear here. We really need to hear this. We have a special problem as people. And I'm going to explain it to you by giving you an individual as an example of what has come over us as a people. And I'm not talking about the Muslims, the Bilalians of America. I'm talking about all African and African-American people, with few exceptions. Now let me explain to you, if I can, with the help of Allah, exactly what I'm talking about. There are people, individuals, who are motivated, if not consciously, unconsciously, to just seek security. To seek security. Now, that tendency in the individual to be motivated by the need to feel secure is good, and it can be bad. Dear beloved people, this tendency in us is more responsible for our history of enslavement and servitude than anything else. There are animals that live mainly to survive. Those animals that live mainly to survive, they are the poorest animals on earth. I hope you listen very good, very attentively. Those animals that live mainly to survive are the poorest animals on earth. The tendency in people to want a secure position, a secure situation, is the same tendency in the animal, or that instinct we call survival instinct. It's the same. For us, it's a tendency to be secure, to feel protected against starvation, against want, hunger, etc. Dear beloved people, that's what has made people slaves more than anything else. How does it work? You look for a situation that can assure you that kind of protection. The welfare is loaded with us. All the big cities, who weigh down the welfare department? We do. Look at the faces that go to get the welfare. Look at the physique that go to get the welfare. These are able people. These are people that should go get the welfare check with a frown on their face.
with bitterness in their face, resentment that I have to pick up this and I don't have a job. But that attitude is not in most of us. Most of us are just happy to get that charity, as we would be to get $400 that we earned for 40 hours this week. Yes, we are. We are just dissatisfied with that. We are not dissatisfied. It doesn't bother. This tendency in us to just look for secure situations, that's what's holding us down. We have to come above that level of consciousness to a level of consciousness that wants more than that. I don't want just to survive. If I wanted to just to survive, I'd go out in the wilderness somewhere. I can survive out there. I don't want just to survive. I want to be the best me, the best M-E, me, that Allah has made. The human being has an urge in him to realize his full worth. That's the human urge. The urge to survive is the animal urge. The urge to measure up to the best that Allah has made you, that's the human urge. If our people will come out of that animal urge into the human urge, you will see a new attitude in our people, a new dignity in our people, and you will see the financial level of our people start to rise. Because they will have a motivation bigger than self in them. This world hasn't been made by people who have small motivation self in them. It's been built by people who took the concern of the world into their hearts and upon their shoulders. That's right, that's what you have to do. Take the concern of the world into your heart and place the world on your shoulders and say, I'm going to carry it if nobody else will. That's what you got to do. If you come into that mind, you'll become a new people. But as long as you struggle just to find a place of security where I don't have to worry about them putting me out next week, I don't have to worry about eating next week. You don't think about next month. It's just next week. Really, it's tomorrow for most of us. So how you doing? Oh, I got it made, man. That's $40. Everything's sweet, baby, today. $40. Nothing to pay rent. Nothing to take care of the bills next month. Nothing to take care of the children. But he got $40 in hand. And that's his security. I got $40. I can buy me some hamburgers. I can take Sister So-and-so out. You got $40. That's going to run out today, right? Or in a little while, depending on how desperate his situation is. But it's going to run out in a little while. We have to get out of that. If this is a major problem, shouldn't it be addressed in Scripture? It is. All right, let me give it to you. Hagar was the maid servant of Sarah. Sarah, the wife of Abraham, and for us Muslims, we know that also Hagar also was the wife of Abraham. But their situations weren't the same. Hagar was the ruling class. She's the big missus, the big miss. Sarah, the big missus, the ruling class. And Hagar is the poor class, the subject class. All right? Now, Hagar accepted the job working for Sarah. Why? Why was Hagar in Sarah's house doing those domestic chores for Sarah? It was because Hagar was motivated by the survival urge. Hagar just wanted to survive. That's all she wanted. So those who want to survive, they're good servants. They know how to please their master. Because their object is to please, so they will have a secure state. So Hagar was so wonderful. Oh, she was so perfect for that situation. Scripture doesn't tell us that somebody went out there and hunt for Hagar. Hagar was just in that house. Nobody go out there and capture her. She wasn't, she didn't have to be captured. She went to the house herself. She said, Missus, you got a lot to do here that old Hagar can do. And old Hagar is a good servant. Oh, I can cook the best cornbread you ever taste. She sold herself to Sarah. You see? And what changed the situation was Abraham. Abraham sees beyond him. He was a man sent by God. And a man who was upright and just. And he had begun to treat, what's his name? Lazarus is his real name, but they give him a different name. Lazier, I think his name is. I can't think of it. I think it's Lazier. Anyway, he began to treat him as though he was going to give him his inheritance. And he wasn't nothing but a member of the poor class, the stranger class, you see. And Sarah then decided that she had to have a child by her husband so that this other stranger, that bum, wouldn't come into the inheritance, you see. So she decided that she would have her husband mate with Hagar to get a son. Right? All right. So she decides to have that, and once the son is born, then jealousy came in. And according to the Bible, she says, oh, never will this, in words to say, illegitimate, inherit my house. But that was the son by her husband that she asked for. Right?
Right.
Yes, but the trouble was, this son is by Hagar. It's okay to be by Abraham. But this son is a child of Hagar, a subject woman, a poor woman, a member of the common people. Now, isn't that the same attitude of the people today? Same attitude. When new leaders come in, that's just and honorable, many times you'll find the people go along with it. Even the rich will go along with it. Up to a point. When it comes to that class now, qualifying for leadership over the house, they don't want that. But you can come in now, and we're equal. You ain't no slave no more. I treat you with respect. You're a member of the family now. Hagar became a member of the family, didn't you? Yes, you're a member of the family now. But once one of you start applying for the leadership, I ain't talking about nominal leadership. Face-showing leadership. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about real leadership where you take over the responsibility. That's you take right. over the reins.
That's right. That's right.
When you start talking about that kind of leadership, oh, no. Majority of the members of the ruling class, they won't accept it.
That's right.
The great majority, they won't accept it.
That's right.
You can be their brother. You can be treated equally up until that point.
That's right.
And you're talking about taking over the reins of responsibility, of leadership? No. No. If he'll go in the office and be our boy, yes. If he'll leave these complicated matters to us, and he just smile and greet our guests and make the speech we want him to make, good. But he's talking about actually taking over? No, no, no. That's the attitude, right? Okay. Well, you see, for a long time in history, we have been portrayed. We have been portrayed, cast as the inferior people of the earth. This ain't no new thing. That's why we've been cast as the inferior people on earth, as happy-go-lucky people, flippant people, fun-loving people, baby-minded people, childish people, that give them a stick of candy, give them ice cream cone, play some music for him, give him some room to dance, then he's happy. You got something to do? Work him hard. Work him long. Make him tired, he go home and sleep. When you wake up, put him back to work or turn some music on for him. That's how he's been treating us. Am I right or wrong? That has been the attitude of the world toward us. All right. So with that, with them having that attitude, then we feel that we can't make it in this world because they greatly outnumber. Excuse me. I'm loaded with handkerchiefs today. If you just look in that pocket, hand me the coat over there. Excuse me a minute. In the coat pocket, down in the, that's right. Right.
Thank you very much.
Feeling that the world rejects us makes us then devise some kind of strategy to exist in that kind of world. Now, you don't have to do this. Don't think you might say, oh, I ain't never sit down and try to make no strategy. No, your heart made it for you. And you didn't even hear the decision your heart made. But it made it, and you followed that decision. That is, take the easy way out. That was a decision the heart made. Because you couldn't handle it up here, the heart made it down there. It says, take the easy way out. And most of us do that. We follow the heart bidding to take the easy way out. So we sell ourselves into slavery. Sell ourselves into disrespect. Sell ourselves into positions of servitude. Positions of indignity instead of dignity. Yes, we do that. Don't you know we would be respected much more if we would come out of that attitude? Come out of that attitude. Don't just look for a meal ticket and a shelter over your head. Be a pioneer. Be willing to do without a shelter over your head, if necessary. Be willing to fast for a day or so, if necessary. Make your objective something bigger than just merely survival. That's the way to make it. That's the way to get new dignity. They have a term in the dictionary, I think it's called symbiotic. It means when two things live with each other because their needs work together or work for each other. My needs and your needs kind of work together. I can give you what you don't have, you give me what I don't have. That's the kind of relationship we have had with America. America needs our colorfulness. America needs our spirit. Look, we have converted America to our spirit. Do you know that? Don't you remember when the Caucasian boy, the European American, don't you remember when they used to be so stiff? Yeah, how stiff they used to dance. I used to watch them on the same program they on now, America's Dance Dance. And they used to dance like a clothes tree. Yeah, they dance like clothes tree. The clothes tree can't bend. They couldn't bend. They couldn't move with the groove. They couldn't move with the music. They were just out of it. But now they dance, and some of them out dance us. They got rhythm, they got the rhythm and everything.
Yeah. So we did that. And they like it. Can't you see how they like it? Oh, the European American is as happy as he can be in the Bilalian spirit. So you see what they wanted from Hager? Yeah. Well, they needed something that they didn't have. And that was that relaxed spirit. They didn't have that relaxed spirit. Their spirit was uptight all the time. And they wanted a relaxed spirit. So they got on. Now, I know, don't they? Whoa, ma'am, there you go again. Telling us something wrong. All the history we got that tells us. They brought us over here to work the field, to be their dog, to be their mule, to be their horse. Well, they got machines now, and they still want it. They don't need any horses and mules and things no more. They got machines. But they still want you. You want to make this country sad? Start talking about you don't want to live in America no more. Man, you'll see the saddest country in the world. Then think about you going. I don't know. You're in the back. You're in worse bargaining position now, though. Something is set. See, they got a lot of you in them now in terms of that spirit. They might not be, they might not cry, they might not be too desperate to hold you back. But if you had said that about 10 years ago, man, you'd have seen some desperate people. What should we do? Please, no, no. You are Americans. You belong here. This is your country. You have put as much in it as any of us. In fact, more. You have been slaves to this country. You have given slaves through sweat and labor and blood for this country. How can America be America without black people? That's what they would have told you 10 to 15 years ago. But now they might say, you got a place to go? They might say, are you going to be all right? You sure you'll be all right? Now, what is our bargain? What do we gain from in this kind of relationship? We feel comfortable in the house of the baddest man on earth, the most knowledgeable man on earth, the most progressive man on earth. We are in the best house that any rat, roach, bed bug, or anything could be in. We know there's going to be food on the table every day, and crumbs going to fall off. We're in the richest house on earth. Hager ain't never been in a better situation. This is our serious problem, brothers and sisters. So we just go on just to happy. We don't care about the change of parties. All of this talk we make ain't nothing but rhetoric. Hot air. Steam. We just trying to make conversation. We playing the dozen. We getting some exercise. We don't have nothing against Reagan. That man can put us in chain again. As long as he give us a healthy stick, most of us will be satisfied. So hell, man, wear these damn things like they braces. They look like Moja. What's that guy's name? Isaac Hayes chain, don't they? Hell, isn't Isaac Hayes? If Isaac Hayes wore them for a show, man, I can wear them for reality. Hell, this is reality, man. We be walking around here in chains, clapping. Yeah. And defend it. Well, man, what's wrong with this, man? It ain't killing me, baby. At least I know where I'm going to get my food tomorrow, man. Because we got that kind of attitude. Wherein we don't want to do nothing but just be free of problems. A man, a real man, don't want to be free of problems. A real man wants problems. He want to measure up to a test. He want to show what he has. He want to show that I have some muscle. I got some ability. He wants problems. He looks for problems. He feels let down. He feels bad-spirited if he hasn't got a problem. To hell, where's the problem, man? Bring me a problem.
But lazy people, they don't want no problem. No problem. And they can do nothing 24 hours a day and be happy. It kills me. I can't understand it. Come in the morning, bloom, 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 bloom. You come in lunch, bloom, 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 bloom. You come in for dinner, bloom, 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 bloom. You get ready to go to bed, bloom, they cut that goddamn thing off. You go to bed, bloom, 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 bloom. You wake up in the middle of the night, 3:30 in the morning, bloom, 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 bloom. Who in the heck listen to this thing? Everybody's snoring. But still it's going. So you go around and cut all that stuff off. Cutting it off. Cutting the radio off. Cutting the boxes off. And they say he woke up. But soon as the noise stopped now, who cut that TV off? Who cut the box off? I was listening to that. Get up the next day. Ain't got nothing to do. No ambition outside of the house. Yeah.